Well, I am really hoping that I will be able to do my part to keep you engaged. I know the food is digesting in your stomachs, and sometimes that makes us drowsy. So I'm going to try to do my part, and I don't know if I see someone sleeping. Is there something here that I could throw at them? Because it... yes, okay. I want to start out with a story that kind of illustrates what we're up against sometimes. There were two young people that were working there at Faith Mission Home, and I'm going to call them Ruth and Andy. They may or may not be their correct names. And one evening, in fact, this was on a New Year's Eve, the staff got together, and that evening they had a foosball tournament. Foosball is one of those tables where you have the little ball the size of a ping pong ball, and so they paired up and they had a foosball tournament. Foosball is something that gets played a lot there at Faith Mission Home. And since there are more young ladies there than men, there were several teams that had only ladies. Most of them had one young man and one young lady as a team. So there were two on a team, and they would compete against each other. And they were having a great time. Now, usually, the fellas are better at foosball than the girls. Do you know what I mean by fellas? What do you call them here in Ireland?
The lads.
Yes, the lads are better. What do you call the ladies? The lads are better than the lassies. You know what I mean. Anyway, as the evening progressed, there was a team of two ladies, lassies, that was doing really well. And it came down to a team that had two lads and two girls competing against each other. And Andy was on the team that had a fella and a girl, and Ruth was on the team that had two girls. And Ruth was really good at foosball. And Andy started trash-talking Ruth to try to mess with her emotionally. And he started telling her that he started calling her a hotshot. Do you know what that means here in Ireland? Like someone who thinks they're pretty good at something. So he said, Ruth, you think you're a hotshot. And she wasn't sure what to think about that, but she kept playing. And then he would throw in another comment that wasn't very nice. And it started to bother her a little bit. But you know what? The girls ended up winning that game. And they won the tournament. Now, I know you ladies all feel like clapping, right? it was pretty neat that the girls won. And, of course, Andy he didn't like it very well, but he was kind of okay with it. But he kept at it. Even after the tournament was over, when he saw Ruth, he would make a little snide remark. And he kept calling her a hotshot. And one day they were sitting in our mail room it's kind of a break room of sorts. And Andy was sitting in there, and Ruth came in, and for whatever reason, Andy gets up and he moves away from where she was sitting. And all the while, this was bothering her, because she was thinking that probably that is what he's actually thinking, And probably that is what the other staff are thinking too. And this went on for a couple of days, and every now and then he would needle her with another comment. And it actually got to the point where it was kind of a big deal. And one evening, we got a phone call, and it was one of the other ladies that was familiar with Ruth and how she was feeling. She said, "Something has to happen. Ruth, she's really bothered by this. And this guy is just being mean to her, and we have got, something has to happen." Well, I'll tell you later what happened, okay? How's that? And if you don't sleep, you'll find out what happened to Ruth and Andy. That's what we're up against, isn't it? Now, that's maybe not even that serious of a situation, but we do find ourselves in relationship challenges. God has blessed us with other people. We're social people, some to varying degrees, but mostly we are around people. I don't think God intended us to be hermits and just be by ourselves and not have relationships. And there are actually, if you break it down, we can have a relationship with God, and that can be complicated, but usually that relationship, God is there for us, and if we're interested, God is interested, and it's not that complicated most of the time. The other thing that we can have relationships with is animals. Did you think about that? Jimmy, I heard that Jimmy has a dog, and he said he walks his dog. That's one of the things he does. We have pets, we like our pets, and when we can have a relationship of sorts with animals, and usually those are fairly uncluttered and not that difficult. But the people, that's where it gets a little messy sometimes. Those are not quite as easy. People are harder to deal with than dogs, usually. We had a dog that I actually had a little relationship problem with him. He was an ornery young thing, and we spent money on that dog. We put in a underground fence, and I thought I had him trained, but he was smart, and he figured out that he can just run real fast, and with about two little shocks, he's over the fence. And, oh, it was frustrating. And I did actually have some relationship problems with that dog. But that, even that wasn't too serious. It's the people. The people is where we struggle and, have the biggest challenges with. And, I think God wants us to have good relationships with people. But we find that it's not always that way. Good relationships can be really good. There isn't much that beats a really good relationship with other people. There's so much good that can happen when you are in a good relationship. You can receive encouragement. You can help each other with stuff. There can be synergy there. You know what synergy is? That means when two or more people are working together on something, there can be the combined effort of two can be greater than two people working independently. Two workhorses working together can pull almost four times as much as one of them can. And that doesn't make sense, but that's synergy when people are working together well. But the same thing is kind of true in the opposite. If you have bad relationships can be horrible. They can sap you of your energy. They can occupy your mind. They can just take effort that you could be putting into worthwhile things into something that is just a drain. Relationships, bad relationships. I did a little research on how many people we interact with in a lifetime. Now that, of course, changes depending who you are and what your circumstances are, but the average, there was some study done, and the average person will interact with other human beings. Does someone want to guess?
5,000.
Is this interacting with the same person more than once?
That's counted? Just one time. So if you interact with the someone at the till at Tesco,
but if you that would. Again, is that counted as a second?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm not sure. I think it's just different people. Yeah, it'd be counted as one time.
5 million.
Well, it's somewhere between there, between 5,000 and 5 million. The website that I found this information on said approximately 80,000 people. Okay, that's a lot of people. But most of those people, we don't have much of a relationship with. Maybe hi, thank you, something like that. Now, the people that we know, like we actually get to know them and recognize their face and maybe know their name and interact with them from time to time, that's more like 600, average, 600. But then if we break it on down and we talk about the people that we actually relate with a lot, maybe your spouse or family members, people that you work with closely, that is going to be a lot less than that. And I don't know what that average number is, but that might be closer to between 50 and 100 people in your lifetime, people that you work with closely. And those are the people that we have the most challenges with. Those are the people that test us and that God uses to shape us. One thing that I think is helpful for us to understand is that these things don't happen by chance. God put us into the families that He wanted us to be in. He put us into the communities. And you are here in Ireland by design. And the people that you're rubbing shoulders with and interacting with, that is not happenstance. God has allowed it. And if you look at it like that, I think it's easier for us to navigate challenging relationships. God has put you here for this time and place. So look at it like that. Now, what should our relationships look like and how should we think of them? Another thing that is helpful is to think of our relating to other people as being somehow in a way we are relating to them, what we are doing, how we relate to them, is in a sense kind of how we are relating to God. In Matthew chapter 25, there, I just want to read several verses that talk about that. It talks there about when the Son of Man shall come in His glory and all nations are gathered before Him. The sheep are on His right hand, the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. And then shall the righteous say, basically they say, when did this happen? And they don't recognize when it was. And if we read on, the answer to that is when you did it to other people. You were doing it to me. And the same is true on the other side of the coin. When you didn't do it to other people, you didn't do it to me. So it's so helpful for us to view other people and what we do and don't do for them. How we relate to them is somehow being a way of us doing things for Christ. That's a principle that I think is helpful for us. The golden rule comes into play. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, it says, Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. If we could just grasp that simple concept, that teaching that Jesus gave us, to do to other people what we would like to have done for ourselves, that will go a long way. In fact, did you ever think about it that etiquette and manners is actually a way of living out the golden rule? We appreciate when people are polite to us and exercise good manners. It's a way of being respectful to each other. And that is actually a working out of the teaching there, the golden rule. By the way, I have just really enjoyed the last couple days. We've went up to Waterford, and we were in Dunmore East, and we've interacted with the community people, and there is a politeness that is a part of the culture here that my wife and I have talked about. And it's interesting. That's something to hang on to and to cultivate, is just being polite and kind. That is not a natural thing. It's not natural for us to think how other people like to be treated. We naturally think about how we would like to be treated. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about IQ. Do you know what IQ is? IQ is a measurement of how intelligent someone is. And it used to be seen as something that was pretty important. IQ. Employers would sometimes give potential employees an IQ test. Is that a thing over here in Ireland? Have you ever heard of that? Yeah, okay. So you know what I'm talking about. Well, I've read recently, well, in the last 5 or so years, I've been hearing about another term, and they are now shifting gears a little bit, and they're saying IQ is not that important. They've come up with something that is actually, they say, is more important than being smart. Does anyone know what it is? Huh? EQ. Who said that? Yes, EQ, which stands for emotional intelligence. And that's just a fancy way of saying they know how to get along with people. Now, there's more to EQ than that, but that's the long and the short of it. Smarts aren't even that important. it's more important for someone to know how to get along with people. And I have seen that. When I have seen very, very intelligent people struggling in the workplace, and someone who happens to know how to get along with someone outperforms them. EQ is an awareness of your own emotions and other people's emotions. How do other people feel about something? That's what EQ is. And if you study it, it actually reminds me of some of the things that you can read in the Bible. The fruit of the Spirit. It reminds me, it almost seems like a secular explanation of the fruit of the Spirit, where there is love and joy and peace and long-suffering and patience and kindness. It's how you relate to other people. That is EQ. And I really think that it's the secular world's way of explaining a biblical principle. They don't even know what's going on. But they're saying that is more important than being smart. Now, there's something pretty interesting about those two concepts, or those two, IQ and EQ. I have been told that IQ, which is basically how quickly you can pick up on a concept, that's smartness. Is someone explains it, if you got it the first time, you're smart. Okay, but you know, for some of us, it might have to be explained three times, a picture drawn, and you know, finally we get it. Okay, then that our IQ is maybe a little bit lower. That part of our ability, generally speaking, doesn't change. How smart we are, we're kind of stuck with what we got. EQ, however, is a part of the brain that can be developed. That's what scientists are saying. You can develop that. If you don't have a high EQ and you decide you're going to work on it, scientists are saying it's a part of the brain that is, they call it plastic, and it can be developed. Well, isn't that something? That's the way it works in our Christian life. We have the ability, God's help, we can develop and grow in things like love and joy and peace and long-suffering. So I think it just all makes sense. So remember, in relationships, EQ is much more important than IQ, the fruit of the Spirit. Develop that. Humility is another thing that is very, very important as we relate to other people. You know, when there's tension or when there's conflict, if you have two people that are humble, it's a small problem if there's a misunderstanding or conflict. But if you have two proud people and there's conflict, whew, that is a big problem. A very small issue can be a big deal. Now, when you have one proud person and one humble person, yeah, it goes better. But when you have two humble people, big problems turn into little problems. Another fairly basic principle in relationships is just being friendly. That's also something I've noticed since we're here, is people are generally quite friendly. Proverbs 18:24 says, "A man that has friends must show himself friendly." That's very basic. The reality, though, is that we find ourselves in Andy and Ruth's shoes every now and then. And sometimes it's intense. Sometimes we hardly know what the next step should be. And I'd like to spend the rest of our time here talking about how do we work through some of those issues. In fact, I actually have a little outline here and a tool that I would like to pass out, and it can be helpful for us as we navigate some of those challenging situations. I'd like to talk about offenses a little bit. I'm reading a book right now called The Bait of Satan by, John Bevere. Has anyone here read that book? Okay, there's a few. I've only read about halfway through, but it talks about offenses and how that Satan will use offenses to bait us. It's like a bait in a trap. And when we are offended, our response is really critical. Because when we get offended, now it's almost like we're very close to being trapped if we don't handle it right. Offenses can lead to all kinds of bad feelings. And those bad feelings can grow into a major thing. I was talking, actually, with John just the other day about the book, and he said that there are, well, we kind of decided there are three kinds of offenses, right? Two, but then one of those, we kind of split it up. But so I want to say three kinds of offenses. It's helpful for us to think about that as it relates to us when we get offended. The first one is a real, genuine offense. Somebody gossiped about me, or maybe they said something that wasn't true, or they cheated me, all kinds of things. A real, legitimate offense. Okay, that's one kind. The second kind is a real offense, but it was not intentional, and the person that committed the offense maybe didn't even know that he or she did it. So an unintentional offense. The third one is an imagined offense, where something happened, but we're not quite sure why it happened, but we have made the deduction that they were feeling something toward us, and that's why they did it. And so we assume, and it's imagined. Those are the three kinds. There might be others, but I think that covers most of them. And there are different ways of handling all three of those. I feel like probably the one that we really need to get a handle on is imagined offenses. We should be really, really careful about those. Even if we're not sure, we need to give people the benefit of the doubt. And it can be very harmful if that is our tendency to imagine things. It affects us in ways that our relationship kind of doesn't blossom the way it could, and we just start thinking bad things about other people. Probably most of you have experienced that, where someone has thought something about you that you had no idea. That's pretty painful, isn't it? And if it's someone that you relate to closely and they do it on a regular basis, it can destroy a relationship to where you can hardly trust the person anymore. So let's be very careful about that. And if we are caught in that, if we ever do that to someone and we discover that we were imagining something about that person, we need to make it right to clear that up and get the relationship back to where it should be. Let's talk about the real offense, but it was unintentional. I think this would be a good opportunity to practice the golden rule. How would you like to be treated if you were the one that committed the offense unintentionally? Well, I would like it if they would recognize it was unintentional and give me some grace and just forgive me. Well, other people would appreciate that from us too. It's a golden rule thing where if I commit an offense, please just recognize it was not intentional. And there can be, you know, a variety of ways of handling that, but I think a good way is just to recognize it was not intentional and be quick to forgive. What about the real offenses? What do we do with those? Where maybe it was intentional. Maybe somebody threw a barb your way and they knew what they were doing and it hurts. What do we do with those? Well, I think there is a time that we can actually sit down and talk about it. Matthew 18 gives us a fairly clear instructions on how to handle something like that. It says there, "Moreover, if thy brother trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone." Okay, you just go to him, just the two of you. It says, "If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother." That's what happens most of the time. If you have the courage to go and actually talk to someone about a difference that you're having, and you do it in the right spirit, you've gained your brother. And there's peace again. And there's instructions there for if that doesn't work, you can take it. It says, "If he will not hear thee, take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established." There is a tremendous safety in taking that approach, because sometimes when we feel like our brother has offended us and he doesn't hear us, we go there with two or three more, the two or three will be able to give perspective to us, where they could help us see that, okay, maybe it's not quite the way you thought it was. So there is a time, I think, for us to talk. And personally, I resist that. I would much rather be a peacekeeper and just try to absorb differences than to make an issue out of it. But one of my friends told me last weekend, actually, when we were together, he said, "Do you know the difference between a peacekeeper and a peacemaker?" You know, the Bible tells us in Matthew 5, "Blessed are the peacemakers." What is a peacemaker and what is a peacekeeper? Then he went on to explain that a peacekeeper will not say anything. He will just absorb offenses. He's not willing to face conflict. Where a peacemaker pursues peace, even if it gets a little messy. Okay? The Bible tells us, pursue peace. And the idea is that we put forth effort into being at peace with someone. And sometimes that actually means having a conversation with someone. Personally, I have seen where I have tried to be a peacekeeper to the point where it didn't work. And I should have been willing to actually sit down and talk with someone earlier than I did. So a peacekeeper will not address an issue, does nothing. other than just absorb it, and allows a problem to fester. That is a peacekeeper. A peacemaker chooses to address the issue. He pursues peace. He does something about it. And he is unwilling to let an ongoing problem fester. Okay? I think there are plenty of cases where we can just absorb something. We don't have to, every time something little happens, make a big deal out of it. But sometimes we need to be willing to address it and talk about it so that there can be genuine peace as we move forward. That's where I think we need to be discerning and try to understand where we should be willing to make an issue out of something and talk about it, or just absorb it. There's something that I think is rather exciting about this whole thing of relationships. This is not something that I am getting directly out of the Bible, but there's been research done on what makes people successful with conflict, when there's conflict. And there was actually a study done. People were recorded in conversations when there was tension and conflict. And there were two things that stood out very clearly in this study. And they weren't that difficult. The first one was, okay, people that were very successful in navigating conflict. The first one was they were willing to talk about it. Okay? They had the courage to talk about it with whoever the conflict was with. That was the first one. The second one was they were able to talk about the conflict without getting emotionally wrapped up in it. In other words, they didn't get angry. They weren't all tore up and all nervous about it. So those are the two things. They said if someone can do that, they are very, very successful in navigating conflict. I thought that was pretty interesting. Being willing to talk about it and then not getting all worked up about it. So back to Andy and Ruth. What happened to them? Well, at the time that this happened, my wife and I were studying and preparing for a marriage seminar. And one of the topics that had been assigned to me was how to deal with conflict between a husband and a wife when there is a marital tiff. And I was studying about this, and we learned about a series of questions that the two people that are in conflict with each other can ask each other. And this was not just for married couples, it was for anybody that is having a conflict. And so I thought, you know, maybe this would work. So I asked Ruth if she would be willing to sit down with Andy, and we would coach her through these questions. And I didn't know if she would have the courage to do it, but she was feeling pretty miserable, and she really wanted to restore the relationship. So she said yes. Plucky little Ruth. Now, Andy was a big boy, and I didn't give him a choice. I just said, Andy, we're going to do this, and I want you to come to my office, and we set a time. So they came in there, and they were a little bit nervous, and I said, look, we're studying for a marriage seminar, and we're going to ask you these questions. And so they kind of laughed and chuckled a little bit, and so we got started, and we worked our way down through those questions, and it was easy for them to restore their relationship. They They followed this outline here, and very quickly, they understood each other. As it turned out, Andy did not mean, he thought he was just razzing her completely out of fun. And when Ruth understood that, it made all the difference. And so, very quickly, by working through these questions, they understood each other, and there was peace again. Just recently, I did this myself with a coworker where there was some tension, and we were not understanding each other, and we gained ground by working through this. So I'm going to ask my wife to come up here, and we're going to demonstrate how to work through this conversation. Would you, young man, mind passing? Maybe you could pass that out to that side. Would you mind passing these out to this side? And we're going to rather quickly go through this. Okay, so this is called a courageous conversation. There are 10 questions, and the protocol here is that I will be asked. Bernice and I, we're having a tiff, okay? And so this is not the real thing, okay? Just so you know. But I'm going to be asking her. Now, we have had tiffs already, okay? But we try not to have them very often. But we have used this. We probably haven't used it as much as we should. But there is some technique involved here. We're going to go down, and I am first going to ask her these 10 questions. And when she responds with the answers to the questions, I am not allowed to interrupt her and to explain or defend or blame. Okay? If you want to write that down, do not blame, explain, or defend. This is listening. I am hearing what she has to say. And then when she's finished, she asks me those same questions. And by the time you're done, you have a much better understanding of what the other person is feeling. And it's a way to work through conflict. It really works. I was pretty suspicious of it at first. I thought, that sounds a little bit gimmicky, but it's not. It works. It works really well. So, and it's a tool. You don't have to follow this perfectly, but we're going to do it. And then you can keep the paper, and the next time you find yourself in conflict, in a relationship, just try it. You might be surprised. Okay, let's get started here. So just imagine that we're having some tension, and she's not feeling good about something, and you know when the wife isn't feeling good, the husband isn't either, and things are just not the way they should be. So the other thing I want to mention, it's very important that you keep your emotions in check. If you are hopping mad, it doesn't work. You have to calm down, and you have to be able to listen. So, okay, Bernice, what is your most pressing issue? Or that's another way of saying, what is bothering you the most?
Well, honey, my most pressing issue is just the lack of communication between us.
So now I repeat what I heard her say, and she verifies that that's what she means. So what I hear you saying is that you are bothered by the lack of communication between us.
That's right.
In addition to this issue, is there something else?
Well, it's just when I ask you something, it seems like the best you can do is grunt a little bit and you don't seem to have time to talk to me.
So what I hear you saying is that when you ask me something or want to talk to me, I just grunt and don't pay attention.
Is that right? Have time to talk to me.
Don't have time. Okay. Now, everything in me wants to explain, but you're not allowed to do that. You're listening, okay? How is this issue affecting you?
Can you ask in addition?
Oh, yes, that's right. In addition to this, is there anything else? And you just keep asking that until everything is out.
No. Right now, there's nothing else.
Okay. Whew. How is this issue affecting you?
Well, I feel myself reacting. It seems like I want to move away from you emotionally, and it's like I feel like you don't need me. I guess I don't need you. I also find myself moving my emotions from you more to our children.
So the way this is affecting you is that you find yourself distancing yourself emotionally, and it feels like you don't need me as much, and you're moving your affections to the children.
That's right.
Okay. What will the future look like? What will the future be like if nothing changes?
I think that we will just drift further and further apart, and eventually we'll be more like roommates instead of married people.
Okay. So we'll find ourselves drifting further and further apart. Mm-hmm. What do you see as my responsibility for this issue?
Could you just please share your thoughts and feelings with me and be interested in my thoughts and feelings?
So you'd like for me to share my thoughts and feelings with you and take an interest in how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. What do you see as your responsibility for this issue?
Well, I know it's not healthy for me to react and to move away from you emotionally. And I also know that I need to be careful to respect your needs and to not bombard you with chatter that makes you weary.
So you see your responsibility as not chattering and I forget what else you said.
Not moving away from
not distancing yourself from me. What does the preferable future look like to you?
That we would just recover our emotional closeness by sharing real interest in each other.
Okay. I'm not going to repeat everything anymore, but you get the drift. Maybe I'll just ask the questions. What is the most powerful thing that we can agree to ask God for?
That we could have a relationship that glorifies Him.
Mm-hmm. Based on the above, what is the one thing we cannot fail to do?
To make our relationship priority.
And what practical steps must we take to make this happen?
Could we be intentional about taking at least 15 minutes daily with no distractions, no phones or falling asleep, just to communicate about what's happening to you and what's happening to me?
Okay. So you see how that worked. Now, if we were going through this properly, she would ask me those same questions, and I could say what I am feeling. And the thing that makes this work so well is that it forces us to listen. And if you think about the components of an argument, An argument is when someone says something and you respond before you hear them out. That's really what makes a good argument, and that's what we're trying to get away from. We're trying to understand each other. So that is a courageous conversation. Take the paper with you. Try it out. It really does work. I think I'm past my time. I'm not sure what time I was supposed to close. But I would like to read out of James chapter 3 yet. This is such a powerful, powerful passage as it relates to getting along with other people. It says there, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But here's the good news. The wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." God bless you as you navigate life and relate to other people, especially the people that you are closest to.